All right. Got an empty courtroom all of a sudden. We have one case scheduled for oral submission on the 10:30 docket, and both of you, I understand, are ready. So we'll call Antonio Zavala Cardenas versus the state. Ms. McBride.
May it please the court, Ms. Kennedy. Good morning.
Good morning.
I wish I had some brand new law to bring you that said it's absolutely dispositive in this case, but nothing has come down since the brief was written, so I don't have that. I would, however, like to reply to the state's brief and some of the allegations that they've made in their brief. And on page 5 of the brief, the state says that the punishment law was not properly and fully explained to the panel. And I would point out to the court that the state spent 16 pages of its voir dire, pages 83 through 99, going over and over and over the law with regard to the range of punishment in this case. And finally, after 16 pages, they got the panel to agree that they could consider the entire range of punishment as long as they didn't find the guy guilty. You think I'm joking? That's what they decided. And I would refer you all to page 99. I've set it out in my brief. The state's attorney, Mr. Davila, was talking to one of the Veneriman, and the Veneriman said, "That's my question. I'm willing to consider he is innocent or guilty, but once proven guilty, once innocent, obviously he goes home, but once proven guilty, I would side with the higher side of the punishment than the lower side." And the state replied, "Okay, and that's okay on your part. The question is, at this point, can you consider the full range?" And the Veneriman said, "Absolutely." And the state said, "Okay, that's all I needed. Very good. Thank you."
Well, but he didn't really respond that he couldn't consider the lower. He said he would be more inclined to consider the higher.
But the point here, Judge, is that what the state was telling these folks is they only have to be able to consider it now. They don't have to be able to consider it if they find him guilty. And amazingly enough, after this little exchange, absolutely nobody on the panel had a problem with the entire range of punishment until the defense attorney stated his question, which was, if you find him guilty, can you consider the entire range of punishment? And more than half the panel said no. They said no, period, no. Now, the state says that, the state sets out the three-prong test on page 6 for the Standiford test. Is it a commitment question? Does the answer give rise to a challenge for cause? And does the question contain any extra facts? Okay. And then the state goes on to say that the question was replete with facts that would have bound jurors to a certain answer after learning several hypothetical facts that were taken straight from the facts of the actual case, for instance, the age of the victim. Well, obviously the state here has confused the facts in this case with the facts in Green, which is cited in the case. In Green, the attorney said, "We're talking about a 5-year-old child." And the court said, "That's an extra fact that is not in the indictment, and that makes it an improper question." In this case, the defense's question didn't even mention age. All the defense question did was set out what this jury would have to do in order to get to the punishment issue. That is, they'd have to find him guilty. It would be a unanimous verdict. It would be beyond a reasonable doubt. They would have to believe beyond a reasonable doubt that he did the following things, and then they simply, and he tracked the indictment. There was not one fact in that hypothetical that was not included in the indictment. So it's a perfectly, perfectly proper question. Also in Green, same case, it mentions that as long as the hypothetical comes out of the indictment, you're fine. That's not extra facts. It's when you put in things like, I don't remember which case it was, but the state said, assume that we arrested some guy with a crack pipe in his pocket and it had residue. Well, see, those were facts outside the indictment, which made it a bad question. But here, the facts that the defense lawyer put forth were absolutely right out of the indictment. There was not one thing that would make this question anything more than a proper commitment question that would give rise to a challenge for cause.
What about the fact that the question sort of came out? I mean, obviously we can't tell what it sounds like, but he added the words honestly and ever fairly consider as little as 5 years. I mean, wasn't he asking them to do more? Not only could you consider it, but could you ever consider it, and could you fairly consider it?
That's exactly what we want them to do. We want them to fairly consider. We want them to honestly consider. If they're not going to do it honestly and fairly, then why consider it at all? I would say those words mean absolutely nothing as far as the appropriateness of the question.
Okay.
We ask them all the time, can you be fair? Can you be unbiased? So I think that's legitimate. Does anybody else have any questions? Because I'm through.
Great. Okay. Thank you, counsel. Ms. Kennedy?
May it please the court. As the Court of Criminal Appeals said in the Jones case, complete impartiality can't be realized as long as human beings are called upon to be jurors. No person can completely remove their experiences, and that is why when faced with people who come into a courtroom with various backgrounds and experiences, you tell them the law requires X. Regardless of what's happened in your life, can you abide by the requirements of the law? The state contends that this did not happen in this case. What we had on page 152 of second volume of the record is we have a fairly lengthy question, which includes the exact manner and means alleged in the indictment, and asks the jurors, could you ever fairly consider on an aggravated sexual assault of a child as little as 5 years in prison and give probation as an appropriate punishment? Perhaps had counsel addressed each of the jurors he's now saying are challengeable with regard to this, we'd be in a different place. But I think the Jones case makes it quite clear that the jurors need to be asked individually on a challenge for cause, do you realize that the law requires X? Yes. Can you put aside your own prejudices and follow the law? Yes or no? What we had was the question asked, we have 10 pages of the large veneer panel saying yay or nay. We then start individual questioning of jurors by the state and the defense in regard to challenges for cause. At no point were any of those jurors brought before the bench and asked if they could abide by the requirements of the law. The state contends that clearly the error was simply not preserved in this case. Defense counsel had the opportunity, indeed used it in several occasions, to individually voir dire witnesses on other areas. the right to remain silent, the ability to understand the English language, and he just didn't take advantage of the opportunity to ask these jurors on this issue. And this, the state contends this issue is waived. Excuse me.
On the basis that they did not, the defendant didn't ask each individual juror this question?
Right. That before a challenge for cause would be proper, the law has to be explained to him and he must be asked whether he can follow the law regardless of his personal views. The state does disagree, I think, fundamentally with defense counsel that a juror would have to be able to probate this case in order to be seated on the jury. In other words, that under the facts of this case, if you couldn't probate this defendant, you were challengeable for cause. That is not what the law requires. The law requires that for an offense, aggravated sexual assault of a child, in all of its permutations, the range of punishment is as little as 5 years in prison or probation. That in all the permutations of aggravated sexual assault of a child, can you consider, not will you impose, but can you consider? There's a large and, the state believes in the law, substantial difference in the two. And defense counsel's question was not just can you consider, but can you give probation? Not consensual. It was an intentional and knowing assault. He meant to do it. Understand if under either the first or the third prong, this was an improper commitment question. It included many of the facts of the case, including the manner and means. And the trial court was correct to deny the challenges for cause. And the state will simply pray for an affirmance.
Okay. Ms. McBride.
Your Honors, that's just not what he said. He said, could you honestly ever fairly consider on an aggravated sexual assault of a child as little as 5 years in prison and giving probation as an appropriate punishment? He didn't say you have to be able to give it. He said, can you consider it as an appropriate punishment? That's the wording. It's right there. He never said you have to be able to give it. He said, can you consider giving it? And that's the correct question. That is the minimum punishment in an aggravated sexual assault. It's 5 years with probation. Now, the state says that no one tried to rehabilitate these jurors when they said they couldn't consider. It's not the defense's place to rehabilitate these folks. It would have been the state's place to try to rehabilitate them. It wasn't reached because when the defense attorney first made the challenges for cause, the state said the form of the question was wrong, and the judge said, granted. They never discussed any of these challenges for cause. They were never even discussed. The judge said, okay, wrong form, and nothing was ever, none of them were rehabilitated. No questions were asked. But if the state had wanted to try to rehabilitate them, they certainly could have. And it's, of course, our position. There was nothing wrong with the form of the question. They should all have been granted. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Case is submitted. And since we have no other arguments to hear this morning, we'll ask the clerk to adjourn us.